Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to episode 141 of the FASD Success Show. I'm Jeff Noble, and whether you're tuning in while tackling the morning routine or you're unwinding after a day that's tested your limits, I'm stoked you're here. You know, this podcast is all about creating FASD success for everyone in the community, from dedicated caregivers to frontline heroes to the incredible individuals on the spectrum themselves. How do we do that? We do that by bringing you conversations with extraordinary people who are making a real impact, sharing their awesome resilience and obviously their success strategies, new emerging research, and all kinds of awesome. We've got a great episode today, my friends. We're chatting with Emma Jewell, and we'll be talking about a new toolkit that's been developed for frontline workers about FASD and mental health. So we'll be going through the toolkit, and I'll be sharing with how you can get it yourself. Now, even though this toolkit may be for frontline workers, if you are a parent and you listen to my podcast, I know you like the up-to-date stuff, the new stuff that you could share, perhaps with your providers, because mental health is no joke, my folk, and we know that. So any tools that we can help, we can get our hands on that are developed by some great people, you know we want to do it. And before we get into all that stuff, I have to straight up apologize if my voice is sounding a bit scratchy. On Friday, my daughter, Olivia, I love her to death, she brought us home a gift. And that gift was gastritis. It was the stomach flu. We call it at home now, the great gastro. Now, I don't need to share the details, ladies and gentlemen, because, well, frankly, it's gross. And I know you guys are, if you're giggling right now or, you know, nodding your head, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, I'm a family of three. And so I always think of you guys. I just always think of you guys, especially some of the folks that are in our online coaching programs of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 children. It ravages the whole family, and it was unbelievable. So again, my goal is to be consistent, so I am feeling better even though my voice doesn't sound like it. So again, I'm just apologizing for that, and the podcast being out a bit later than usual. So any hoozle, I come with some good news, like some good stuff. If you listened to last week's episode, episode 140, that was with Audrey McFarlane. I teased a little something we were considering putting together to transform your maybe not so great days into ones filmed with a little bit more aha than like, filled with more aha than ah, you know, because it makes you feel that way. Oh, I can't assume that everyone listening listened to last week's podcast. And if you didn't, you should go to fasdsuccess.com/podcast. We have over 141. Get in there. Anyways, it was with Audrey McFarlane. She is amazing. Go check it out. But basically what happened is a couple weeks ago, I got tagged in a comment in our community page, facebook.com/fasdsuccess, which I love being tagged and I love people sharing comments. And one of them said that it was on a video I did. And she said that the one simple strategy helped her avoid, like, called it a mega meltdown. And it was able to help her, you know, avoid World War III. So she said normally after patients wore out, right? Because people aren't inherently like just going to being angry. Every day we try to do our best. I get that. But so normally what happens after the patients wears out, mom would have engaged, you know, yelling, screaming, the name calling. It would have lasted for hours. No end in sight. And then, you know, everyone's gassed and scared. But avoiding this mega meltdown was just one quick tip out of 30 that I have. And so then that's when I got to thinking. And then I went and asked my newsletter group, you know, if you get emails from me when we talk about when we put out new podcasts or offers or anything that we're doing, I said, hey, would you like access to all 30 of these sanity saving quick tips? Because it's basically would be like me on your shoulder daily, keeping your mind right, right? Because this is the grind. It's me supporting you so that when shit hits the fan, dude, you know what to do. So I created these during COVID, and I went back and I read the comment and I watched the video, and then I kept watching a few more, and like I said, wow, these are really good, and these are just as relevant today as they were a few years ago. So I said, if I put this together in a package and for like under $30, would you like that? And no joke, we got a couple hundred replies saying totally. So we are doing it, and we're close to being done it, and we're excited about it. If you get emails from me, great. You'll get one regarding this when it's ready to go. And then we're going to keep it open for 5 days or so, and then we'll start it. And what I want to do is, after the end of the 30 days, is get together with those who want to, and we could talk about it, and I could do like a Q&A. Frickin' A. I think that's great. And apparently, like, we got lots of comments back for people to think that's great too. So it's almost done. Enough about future you kicking butt, taking names, and that's going to be awesome. Let's dive into this interview we got rocking and rolling, okay? So we are speaking with Emma Jewell today. And Emma is a registered social worker and is a research assistant with the Psychology, Law, and Neurodevelopment Plan, Policy, and Research Group at the University of Guelph, and as well as the Canada FASD Research Network. She completed her undergraduate degree and thesis at the University of Guelph before her master's as a social worker at Wilfrid Laurier University. In her free time, Emma enjoys cooking, going on walks. Oh, Emma, I gotta ask you about this. And spending time with friends and family. That's awesome. After the interview, guys, I'm gonna do a quick recap, you know, give you some words of encouragement because you have a kick-ass job, but it's hard. And hopefully we'll learn. You get the toolkit and everybody's awesome. So if I'm ready, you're ready. All right, let's go. Hey, everybody. Here we are with Emma Jewell. Emma, thanks so much for doing this, dude. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, man. You came highly recommended from our good friend, Audrey McFarlane of CanFASD. Shout out to those guys because you have been doing some work with them. I know they have something like the trainee program, but I want to hear it from you as a first-time guest. We like to get to know you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, dude.
Thanks. Yeah. So I am a research assistant at the University of Guelph with Dr. Caitlin McLaughlin, who I know you've also had on the show.
Yeah, on the law. Breaking the law.
For sure. So I work with her, and then I'm also working with CanFASD with Audrey McFarlane and doing some great work with, you know, on both sides. So the mental health toolkit, which I know we'll get into, was more on the side of working with CanFASD. I was also able to do their trainee program. Oh my gosh, was that this year or last year?
Oh, dude, they all blend. You're right. But it was actually this year, believe it or not.
Okay.
This year feels like 6 years. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when it's, you know, all at the same desk in the same place. But I was lucky enough to do that program, which was so cool just to connect with, you know, up and coming researchers in the area and get to know, you know, have casual conversations with like Mansfield Mela and Catherine Flanagan and just get to know them in a more casual environment was so nice. And to see, you know, the FASD community is so small but powerful. So just being able to, you know, sit in a room and talk with like-minded people and engage in some like questions around research. Yeah. And it was just
sorry to interrupt, but let me ask you this. How did it become like-mind? Like, take me back a little bit, like, why research? Why not like have a Taekwondo studio? You know, where, how'd you get here?
I can't do sports. So that was out of the question. Mm-hmm. But so honestly, it came from undergrad and I was at the University of Guelph doing psychology. And I originally thought I would be a counselor. That was kind of my goal and to work with people in the criminal justice system. So I took a psychology and forensic course with Dr. Caitlin McLaughlin. And just listening to her speak, I was blown away. And hearing her talk about FASD, it was the first time I had ever heard about it. It was in third year of my undergrad.
Oh my dude, that's a whole other conversation, honestly. It makes me cringe, but I'm so glad for Dr. McLaughlin to
I know.
When passionate people speak about their passion,
There's nothing like it.
And they start speaking the facts and you're like, holy smokes, this whole population is being missed. And then you learn about it, you start to see it everywhere. Then you get the bug, right?
It's exactly that. It was exactly that. And I went to her basically after a class and I was just like, I love everything you're talking about. Like, how do I do this? How do I work with you? Like, how do we do this? And so she was able to offer me a research assistantship with her. I ended up doing a thesis with her. And just basically continued to work with her.
Yeah. So, us normal folks, what's a research intern? Like, what is that?
What does that look like?
Yeah. Like, so, what do you do? Like, so you said, hey, I want to work with you. And then she said, cool. So, what is a research? Like, what is that?
What's that? Yeah. So, for me, that looked like there was a project that they were just starting and that's actually just recently been published. It was a case law review. So I was working with a graduate student, Caitlin Mullally, and we were working to look at kind of the intersection of criminal justice and FASD. So for me, that meant really just getting, you know, tasks as an RA, especially because I was a
like, what do you
student.
Do? Are you getting coffee or are you digging through?
No, data? I'm digging through data, creating coding forms.
What's a shit task that they give you like that you have to do like, and you just, it's awful, but you have to do it.
Oh.
You're like, there's so many. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, the job's sweet, but you're just like, this is crap.
I mean, that project was incredible, but it was very difficult because we were reading through legal cases. So
there it is. So that, barf, right?
It was tough. Yeah. Definitely. And then not a legal person. I was a psychology person. So it came with a huge learning curve.
The language.
Yeah. Yeah. But I kind of loved it. It was hard.
Yeah.
But I loved it. And I feel like it increase my knowledge like so quickly to like have to sit and figure out the language, you know, and really take time to learn that. So that was a great, I loved that project.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. So then we'll fast forward. You've been turning heads a little bit. You did a great article, which I wanted to talk about afterwards, about implicit bias, because I think that's just a juicy bit of information that my parents should know about and a good subject to talk about. But how did you get involved in a toolkit? So let's remember that people don't know exactly what we're talking about. So hit me up, like, what are we talking about? Mental health toolkit. Like just a quick synopsis and then we could go
through. So essentially it's a website. And what we've done is we've tallied together, brought all together all of the research and information that we could find around mental health and FASD, specifically geared towards counselors, mental health providers, crisis intervention, anyone working in spaces of mental health, so that they have kind of a one-stop space to learn as much as they can about mental health and FASD to better support people.
Okay. How did this come? If I know anything about the pathology that Ken FASD uses, it's broached by an advisory committee, sent to the researchers, because obviously mental health, there's a gap. Is that sort of the origin story?
So there definitely was recognized as a gap. It was brought forward by the Canada Northwest Partnership as a project. And then I was involved in putting together an incredible advisory committee. So that had researchers, caregivers, mental health professionals, as well as people with lived experience to really figure out what needed to be included, the type of perspectives we wanted included, how we wanted to present the information, all of that. So they were very involved from the beginning of the project.
Because mental health's no joke, man. You know, using current stats, over 90% of individuals, right, will have some mental health challenges through their lifetime for a myriad of reasons. One of which, you know, the brain is built different. So therefore, brain domains are affected different, you know, white matter, gray matter, it's all even just a little change. And so that could have a, you know, huge cascading effect. That's a huge number, man. That is a huge number. And we're saying this, and I am saying this to you, not to scare you if you're watching this or you're listening to this, but to let you know, A, it's a huge issue, but B, you could be the best parent on the planet and doing everything right and everything you can, and your child could still develop some mental health issues. So again, not to scare, just to inform, and also to have people, you know, parents realize that the kiddos aren't being lazy, unmotivated, manipulative. If they're sad, they're sad. And it's our job to know more. And subsequently, then we could know that as parents, but then it's to get the professionals on board, dude, which is anguish for my, you know, audience all on its own, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, even though this, you know, resource is geared towards mental health professionals, we also wanted to make it something that caregivers could like access and more, you know, accessible language and things like that, to even use it to advocate with their, you know, therapists of being like,
parents know
try
first.
Some of these.
Parents know first. And then it's their job, whether they like it or not. And it is kind of crappy. They have to teach others. They have to, they have to. And oftentimes it comes with resistance. Why? Those misconceptions, that stigma, and that implicit bias. And also, you can't see it. You know, unless you know, like, you know, majority of individuals look normal, talk normal. You know, and so they look like me and you, have great expressive language and society stigma. So, and you know all about that with your work in forensics in the law. But let's talk about this. So it's a website folks can go to. And what is the goal? So a social worker lands on this site and by the end, they're able to.
So the hope would be one that if they have never heard of FASD, which unfortunately is a real possibility, that they would have an increased understanding of what the disability is, some of the misconceptions around the disability, if they've only heard of it, you know, in the media or briefly. So clearing up some ideas that implicit biases people might hold, as well as giving very concrete practices that might work for people with FASD. So we have an entire section that outlines some what we're calling best practices around mental health support. So very concrete things that people can adapt and flex, likely the things they're already doing to better work with people with FASD. Because unfortunately, a lot of the time people with FASD have just been left out of mental health support, or it's deemed too complicated, or people feel like they don't,
they don't want the liability. Like, we can even go deeper. Doctors don't want to get sued. Psychologists and psychiatrists have no idea what to do. A lot of them don't care. And I know that's my, that claim, and obviously that's a blanket statement, we love psychologists, comes from talking to one of the doctors where the city I came from. My guy had to go to inpatient, and just so happened the head of psychologist was there, just so happened. And he took 5 minutes, you know, to talk to me, and he was just very honest. And he said, male practice, not interested, all those sorts of things. Awful. So I agree that it's super important.
So we're hoping, you know, to increase people's comfortability in working with people with FASD, because especially if all they've heard is like, oh, too complex, like too difficult, that social workers, counselors, they may have, you know, a bias towards not wanting to work with people out of like fear that they're not going to do it properly. So we even have some self kind of reflective activities around assessing your own comfort and also assessing, you know, potential implicit biases that might get in the way. And then also providing, you know, additional resources, other links to, there's a lot of FASD knowledge and materials out there. So we also wanted to make sure that we were, you know, linking to a lot of the already existing knowledge. And then providing those really concrete, you know, approaches that people can use in the counseling relationship to hopefully lead to better outcomes for people with FASD around mental health.
So then how do we bridge the gap? How do we bridge the gap? Because I think it's a good time to talk about that, what you wrote, because that is a major block, right? That you wrote on kenfasd.ca about implicit bias. And in the article, you say implicit bias refers to unconscious attitudes, meaning, you know, not fully aware, ideas and or stereotypes about people that can influence our thinking, behavior, and action. Implicit biases are often learned and perpetrated through the media, personal experience, learned norms and values, as well as misconception and lack of information, as well as social workers with massive caseloads, you know, crushing overwhelm and this whole mixing pot. And the person who's meant to advocate also is looked at as part of the problem. How do they do, like, you know, that's a billion dollar answer, but, you know, from what you guys know, how do they approach their social worker to look at this?
The individuals themselves or the caregivers?
Yeah, the parents. That's who's going to like, that's who's going to show it, right? Like, how do they do that, you know, when even the social worker's like crushed by their caseload?
Absolutely. That is definitely one of the things we even talk about in it, that there's going to be barriers to individuals feeling like they can, take on doing more research, like doing more knowledge trainings, et cetera. That takes time and people are overwhelmed. People are overworked already. So I think it's figuring out, there's a few things we've done on the website to hopefully give people bite-sized information that they can take and give to mental health workers. So, for example, we have summary sheets. So, while each website page is quite lengthy, has tons of links, has tons of information, we've created one page summary documents that has like, here are like the most concrete, important information from this page. So, I think those create some kind of way that caregivers or individuals could take, a single sheet and be like, I see on here that it says, how important the relationship building part of counseling is, or adapting language, for example. Do you mind reading this like single page thing? It might help you, in terms of connecting with my child, or I feel like this technique that they've spoken here might be helpful for our work together, what have you. So hopefully those tools can help to kind of advocate while not being like, here's a 90 page resource. You need to read it all before.
Because no one will, right?
Unfortunately not, but we're hopeful that, social workers do need to continue to do professional development. That's part of our, being registered with the college. That's part of what we need to do as social workers. So hopefully this can be considered, additional training and is prioritized by mental health workers. But in terms of that advocacy piece, I do think we did want to create, opportunities for bite-sized information and actual like physical resources to be able to be, printed out and used in that way. So it's one small part of
No, I
what of
understand.
yeah.
There has to be a version one,
Yeah.
right? Absolutely, there has to be a version one. So, what's included? So, there is information on FASD. We could clearly see that. And so, big shout out to Dr. Jackie Pye, Dr. Kaylin McLennan, Dr. Kelly Harding, Dorothy Reed. She's on the advisory committee. Randy Martin, Maria Bellin, Wanda Bellin, Brenda Knight, Dr. Badry, Kate Evans and Amber Ham, double M. That's what I'm talking
Yes.
about. You, Audrey, and obviously Lindsay
Yes.
Wolfson. You got to give them shout outs to the people who are
Amazing.
behind the scene because
Yes.
often folks are like, who's doing the work out there? And there's lots of dedicated people doing the work out there for sure. Okay,
Yes.
so this is also the framework around this is from the THO, Dr. Pye and Vanessa Jolly's work around the Towards Healthy Outcomes. How is that a merger? Why is that framework about like healthy outcomes? Why did you link, or do you know why you guys linked that
Yeah.
model with this?
So really we wanted to make sure that all of the information we were gathering and the way that we were presenting was within a framework that was like already established and was well supported and loved already. And the philosophies around the Towards Healthy Outcomes, around a lifespan perspective and strengths-based and considering systems, those felt very appropriate around mental health care and the way that we wanted to present information. So we wanted to make sure that we were emphasizing that, people with FASD are going to change throughout the lifespan. That includes capacities, that includes goals, that includes strengths, like, and how as a mental health professional can you support that change and also recognize that change and leverage people's strengths and capacities at different times towards better outcomes in mental health. So it was really those philosophies from the THO that were able to guide the way that we wrote and developed the information.
Okay, that is great. Great answer. And then I think it is important, this, which does give this what they call in the business a USP, which is a unique selling position, and that you do have about addressing those biases right in here. And people love, like those little quizzes and stuff. Like people dig it.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
We wanted it to be concrete, not just, there is a lot of talk about implicit bias and around addressing, our unconscious attitudes and things like that. But sometimes people are like, okay, I know I have them. Like, now what? I don't know. Now what do I do? So we really wanted to give some, here are some concrete things you can try to think about and action around, you know, changing your unconscious attitude. So
yeah, for sure. And then talk about addressing biases. It's mainly like that paradigm shift. Right. And then you have a great video from great individual on the spectrum, Miles. And yes, you're right, it's not long. It's not so weighted because people look to see, you know, that little bar on the side. If it gets smaller when you scroll down and it's still like this yeah, big. So, you know, you're like, whoo, absolutely. Yeah. What is the goal? Like, what is like the absolute, like if you close your eyes and everything went according to plan, what would this do? What would happen?
I mean, the ultimate goal is to improve the mental health and well-being of individuals with FASD and their caregivers. That's the main objective. It's a lofty goal. So I would say smaller term goals would be to provide information to professionals around FASD, as well as opportunities to consider their own thoughts, attitudes, behaviors, and current practices and ways that I think a lot of mental health professionals consider that this means like throwing out what they're used to doing and completely shifting, instead of really just flexing and adapting your current ways of doing things to the, you know, individual's unique needs.
Yeah, agreed. And it's how do we get what success is across to a social worker? One yes, of the narratives is independence, independence. And what we know with individuals on the spectrum is that you could see 2 steps forward, 12 steps mm-hmm, back. But that's actually, yeah, you know, part of the journey. And, you know, mm-hmm, I know social workers want to help, right? That's innate. Yeah. That's why they're doing what they're doing. And it's hard to see, you know, an individual on the spectrum maybe not progress at the pace or mm-hmm, not pick up the information. But then if the individual doesn't understand how their brain works or why, mm-hmm, then you get discouraged as a social worker, just like mm-hmm, as a parent, then you get resentful. Like that's why the caseload turnstile happens. You see it in yeah, friends all the time. What's
yeah,
your,
I completely
what's,
agree.
What's your personal opinion, having even done work in the mental health forensics, about that bias? Like, what don't they get? Do they not get because it's, you can't see it, like, because it's not in school? You said third year grad school, nobody said, hey, how can they consider it if no one ever mentioned to them to consider it?
I think that's part of it for sure. I don't think we talk about unconscious attitudes and implicit biases enough, and that we all hold them. Like, no matter how far along we are in our learning journeys, however far along we are in our knowledge, we still hold them because they're so ingrained from such an early point in our lives. And depending on our experiences and social positioning and everything, it's going to change the way we, you know, perceive the world and the information that we get. So I think part of it is not having enough conversations. And then I also think that there's not enough FASD knowledge out there at a young age. You know, it wasn't a disability I had heard of until university, which, and honestly, there wasn't a lot of focus on FASD specifically, even in social work education. It mm-hmm, wasn't, you know, a blatant topic around how to best support people with FASD. So I think there needs to be a huge increase in our conversations about FASD and the strengths and challenges that people have.
Yeah, like absolutely. So how do people get this? How do they get this? How, where do they go? What do they do?
Well, CanFASD plug.
Yeah, no, plug it all. This, oh, sorry. I forgot to tell you that this is the shameless self-promotion segment.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone, come and see how good I look.
Yeah, yeah. Shameless self-promotion. Yeah. What do you want my yeah, folks to do?
Well, honestly, CanFASD has incredible information. They have incredible training, too. I've been lucky enough to do a lot of their online trainings, which have been wonderful for any professionals out there. Yeah. I would highly recommend them. Honestly, there's a lot of information on YouTube. Also, like watching all of Miles' videos was so informative to me while I was developing the mental health toolkit, and to hear it from somebody who has yeah, FASD, I think is very important. There's a lot of self-research you can do. Also, I would be careful sometimes of information online because there are a lot of harmful stereotypes and information that is perpetuated around FASD. Yeah. So honestly, a lot of information is linked on CanFASD. Yeah, so you can so find a lot of the more reputable
Is there a set? What would they just do? Search it?
Yeah,
or
it's actually right when you go to the CAN-FASD website on the right-hand side, there's kind of a bar menu with a bunch of options and mental health.
Oh, there it is right there. Okay, got it. So they could download it from there and then share that information with their social work or anybody that parent is going to talk to about mental health, and even educating themselves about mental health and then normalizing it and where it's not so crazy, scary. Like, anyway, I didn't say it, but you know, the whole, you have to name it to tame it. Mm-hmm. And our caregivers are often left in a perpetual state of angst because they don't know A, about the disability, or B, about what's happening, and it's scary. So putting out information like this, as you know, I'm a big fan of CAN-FASD and what they're doing. And I'm a fan of yours, dude. Thanks for sharing that. That was awesome. And so everybody go and download it and send it to the folks that you know, especially if you are a social worker yourself. Now, what if folks have questions specifically about this? Who are they hitting up?
They can absolutely email me. I can give you my information.
Yeah. Say it. So if people are listening and they have to say, what is it?
So it's Jewelle at uoguelph.ca. So uoguelph.ca.
Google, dude.
And feel free to email me.
So what's next for you, Emma? Like, what are you doing? What's going on?
Great question. Yeah. So right now, I would say my work with the University of Guelph has been my priority at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're doing a big project around screening and identifying individuals within criminal justice context. So that's more my work with Dr. Caitlin McLaughlin that's been taking up a lot of my time. It's a great project with, again, a lot of connections with wonderful researchers from University of Alberta, Saskatchewan. Yeah.
What is that one about? Plug that a little bit. What are you doing?
So that one is, sorry, so many projects.
That's okay.
Is around improving and supporting outcomes for individuals who have been involved in the criminal justice system. So around increasing knowledge in for professionals that work in criminal justice contexts, and then also developing a screening toolkit and accompanying resources and training materials out of that. So a ton of different projects and knowledge gathering opportunities.
So you're just like, okay, let me take the biggest issues with this disability and tackle them all at once. Huh?
Basically, yeah.
Oh, gosh, because that's the justice system is another thing. Well, we hope you stick around in this field, dude, because we need folks like you, especially, you know, the next generation, come help and to continue all the work of all these other awesome people, you know.
Thanks.
We'll check in, we'll check up and see how things are doing. And I just appreciate you doing this.
Thanks so much. I've loved chatting with you and I appreciate you having me on to chat about the mental health guide.
You know it, dude. We love it. Thanks. I appreciate it. Oh, that was so awesome. Emma Jewel, you are a jewel. Thanks for coming out and doing this for us. I just think it is so cool when I hear people switching their academic preference or major or to focus on FASD. These are the folks that are coming up behind the current researchers, and I love it. All right, so to get into this, to download it, the best thing to do is to go to our website, www.fasdsuccess.com/podcast. fasdsuccess.com/podcast. And if you go to this episode, it'll be the recent one if you're listening to this during this week. And at the end in the show notes, it'll have all the links listed below because it doesn't quite... Because the actual thing is canfasd.ca/mental health toolkit. You could do that too. We'll put those on both of those things. But just to keep it from being super complicated, even going to my website, awesome. So go check it out yourself. Or if you have a great relationship with a social worker or anyone on your team, you could send them there. No doubt that it will have some great information because it is hard to discern. We know how difficult it can be. So the more tools, the merrier, you know. So we also talked on the challenges in the mental health for individuals with FASD. You know, we talked about how there needs to be a clearer understanding among professionals and the high prevalence of mental health issues in the FASD community. Like, it's so crucial, right? Like, it's about bringing light to an often overlooked or misunderstood aspect
of FASD and such a high prevalence rate. And it's also coupled with other things, you know, there's mental health and trauma and other health issues, and it's a cascading effect. And this is about ensuring they receive the support they really need. We also touched on a critical issue, implicit bias and misconceptions surrounding FASD. Okay, I want to share implicit bias. I'll go into it. So implicit bias refers to the attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, like our actions, decisions, unconsciously, right? So these biases, they're not the result of intentional prejudice or discrimination, but rather they're ingrained perceptions, and that can influence how we view and interact with others. And it's often with us without even realizing it. And so, like, in the everyday world, you could see that in professional roles, like a firefighter. The firefighter must be a man, right? So that bias stems from societal stereotypes and traditional gender roles that unconsciously influence our thinking. Because when you hear of firefighters, you see, like, it's mostly men, right? But that's not the case. So you might automatically picture a man, even though women are equally capable and increasingly present in that profession, just like maybe a doctor or a lawyer. This kind of bias isn't intentionally malicious, or you're not being malicious, but like it does reflect ingrained perceptions about maybe gender roles. And so if we talk about for caregiving, so there might be a subconscious belief that individuals with FASD are just bad. They're just inherently unruly with behavioral, or they're capped, you know, they can't learn, their brain can't grow, it can't change, or they're incapable of learning. Like, such biases can stem from limited exposure to accurate info about individuals with FASD. The bias, the implicit bias, that if there's trouble at home, well, then it's the parents' fault. And these, again, are from limited exposure, from understanding about FASD, stereotypes or personal experience that are generalized to everybody with FASD. And so the same thing goes with mental health workers, professional workers. Even if you hear FASD, it's often not, there is a bias. And so the best way through that is education. And I believe with the mental health toolkit, it's a start. It's a great start. And the anchor needs to be in a professional that you have a relationship with to send them to this and letting them know that it'll be super helpful. Let's not forget, though, that the social workers have overwhelming caseloads, and how this toolkit hopefully is actionable, bite-sized information for them, because they are crushed under the weight of caseloads and having to do notes and bureaucracy and red tape. So speaking of all that, and speaking of bite-sized information, don't forget, soon we're going to release the Sanity Savers quick tips for you guys, because that's what it's about. It's about having the information readily available to you, but at top of mind, because sometimes we could have implicit biases. And the only bias you should be having right now is about how much of a badass you are, because you're dealing with shit every day, you know. And I bring levity, but don't think that I don't know that, you know, you're dealing with the tantrums in public, or like the inappropriate or embarrassing behavior in public, you know, trying to get your kid to frickin' brush their teeth or have a shower, you know, all of that. I know you're dealing with that every day. It's with their social cues, their lack of impulse control. I get it. And you're in the trenches every day, slugging it out, and you're doing a really good job. And you are listening to this. If you are listening to this, that means you are trying your very hardest, especially at this point of the episode. So that's what my company and my team, we're going to do, is we're going to keep putting things out and keep doing our best to help you. So our offer is coming very soon, but you're going to have such a good week. I know it. Why do I know it? Because you are going to eliminate implicit biases saying, do I have good evidence to believe what I believe? The chances are you don't. You know what the evidence is? You are good. You're pushing real hard. You're doing your very best. You're dealing with your neurotypical kids. You're dealing with the school. You're dealing with the spouse. You're dealing with the mother-in-law. And you're dealing with it because you're a badass. I love you. I'll see you next time.